We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the show. The New Orleans Pelicans, since the trade, have won exactly zero games. None. Not one. They haven't even been close. Or do you consider, you consider the OKC game close? Was that close? It was kind of close.
Yeah, they led more than they trailed.
Close-ish. What's going on here, Michael? I mean, is there something to be said about actually being able to hit shots that are open? Is that important? Does that matter?
Yeah, I mean, they are getting open looks. They're getting to the free throw line and just absolutely missing free throws. Like, that can't really be put on coaching. That can't be put on scheme. It is a make or miss league, but you see 0-3 and if you look at things as just binary, good or bad, and the record, I could totally get it. I'm telling you, especially after that Oklahoma City game, I'm optimistic. Maybe not about the playoffs, maybe not, about them going on a winning streak this season, but I saw a lot of things that I think for the long-term future of this team and these guys the future is still a lot brighter than I would have said it was on February 12th or February 14th.
All right, so let's get one thing out of the way. Playoffs. What is your percentage chance that this team makes the playoffs right now as of today?
Well, I'll tell you what I think they need to do to make the playoffs. I think they need to go 5-0 against Portland and Denver. And in the other 15 games, go something like 9-6-ish. So the odds of that happening, I would say, are 15 to 20%. So I wouldn't say extremely likely, but I will say these three games they lost, I don't think those are the death nails. I think you got March 14th against the Blazers, the 26th against Denver, April 4th against Denver, April 7th against Denver, and then the last game of the season, April 12th against Portland. I think those games are games that if you lose, you're basically dropping two games. I think you got to go 5-0 on that and then just keep your head above water, beat the teams that you should beat. Like you got the Lakers twice, the Pistons, the Heat, Charlotte's on there, Sacramento, Chicago at home. I think basically that's what you got to do. Go 5-0 against those teams, and beat the teams that you should beat otherwise and maybe sneak a surprise victory here and there. I think it's possible, but I think it would happen less than, you know, one out of every four universes. I'd put it around 20%. How about you?
That's actually the number I was thinking was 20%. So I was trying to think while you were talking there, should I change it, make it sound different, like 22% so I could be cool, but now I'll go 20%. Yeah, it's just there's just not enough talent on the wings on this team. And, you know, we're going to see Solomon Hill maybe hit a couple threes. We're going to see Etuan Moore, you know, get better and better as he plays with these guys. But after that, like, do you believe in Hollis Thompson and Reggie Williams doing anything? Like, maybe they'll get hot for a game. But, you know, and it's one of those weird things, too, where, like, last year we saw Dell Demps go into the D-League and pull out some guys, and like James Ennis and Frazier, who suddenly seemed like they could be NBA players. But the reality is the reason why they look pretty decent is they got the ball a lot, because there wasn't anybody else to get the ball on that team. Everybody was hurt or shut down for the rest of the season, so they shared the ball, they moved the ball around, they played really hard, because this was their chance. This is, last year was why James Ennis got a middling contract to go play with somewhere. This is why Frazier got paid a little bit. Like, that was their shot, and they seized it. It was great. But this team isn't going to be like that. You're going to have Davis. You're going to have Drew. You're going to have Cousins on the floor. There's not going to be sharing the ball. If you come up out of the D-League and you're put on this team, your direction is make your open shots, defend like the devil, and, you know, maybe every once in a while you might get the chance to dribble a couple times.
Yeah, I agree. I will say, though, if Drew Holiday had played in these three games even 80% of what he was before the break, the Pelicans are 2-1 in these three games. So while I agree that they're not going to get much else elsewhere, if AD and Boogie are playing like this, and Drew Holiday's playing close to what he was pre-All-Star break, you know, you could be, we have seen top-heavy teams in the past where 80, 85% of their production comes from three guys, and then the other guys just got to not turn it over and not be terrible and be somewhat respected. So I think it could be a couple of ways. I think if Drew turns the switch back on, and, you know, also I think they need one or two guys to do what Norris Cole and Quincy Pondexter did 2 years ago, where they just kind of played outside of themselves. They had, you know, career numbers for a month and a half, and, you know, we thought that they were long-term role player because they were hitting all their threes. And I think you need one or two guys like that. Could it be a Jared Jack? Could it be a Hollis Thompson? Could it be, you know, even Solomon Hill or Etuan Moore? I don't know. But while we can rightfully bash all these other guys, if Drew Holiday is, you know, I mean, over these three games, this is sickening. 11 for 38, including 2 of 14 from 3, and 16 turnovers.
Yikes.
That's not bad. That's like, that would be the worst starting, not even worst starting, that would be the worst guard in the NBA bad if that would be, you know, the norm overseas. I mean, he has been, I would say, an F in these three games. Maybe for spurts in the Dallas game, he played like a D and he just had a couple of shots roll out. But he has been an F. And all I'm saying is he was an A minus in January and February. If he gives me a B, not even what he was before, if he's a B, the Pelicans are 2-1 in these games, and we're all excited about the future because AD and Boogie are, you know, when one's off the court, the other one's dominating and vice versa. So, yeah, all the other guys, but give me B Drew, and this team makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. He's been horrendous. Like, I think the first quarter of Dallas was the only moments where he hasn't looked absolutely horrendous in pretty much everything he's doing. So, question for you then about DeMarcus Cousins. There's a technical tonight, a little crappy ticky-tack call between him and Steven Adams in the very first, 30 seconds of the game. So is he out for Detroit? Do you think they're going to be able to get that rescinded? Sacramento was every single time he got a technical, they would submit a request to have it rescinded, and it actually works fairly often. What is your take on that? Was that a real technical foul? Is that worthy of a tech?
If that doesn't get rescinded, I will believe that there is a conspiracy against him. It's funny when you watch a guy and he's on another team, you don't really care, you don't buy. Since DeMarcus Cousins has come here, I've been kind of sympathetic to him because that guy gets beat up and pushed on and hit. And yeah, I mean, they'll call it. I mean, he had 15 free throws tonight, so it's not like they never call it. But, you know, he touches somebody with a pinky and it's a foul. And there's times he gets thrown to the ground and, you know, everybody tries to mess with him and, you know, get him into trouble. And the refs buy it far too much, you know, way more than they should. That I can't imagine. Like, who was it? It was Steven Adams, right? If Steven Adams and Anthony Davis get tangled up like that, the exact same actions happen. What odds do you put it on a double technical or technical on AD tonight?
10%,
same exact thing.
10%.
Right. So it's like, you know, I understand
and
that.
It wouldn't be the first 30 seconds of the game. It would be after Davis and Adams have been tussling for like, you know, three straight plays and they're starting to get a little chippy. Then someone would call that double technical and just say,
right. Right. So, like, I understand who Boogie was in the past. I understand that look on his face. Like, I hate that look and I like the guy. So I totally get it. But, like, we just see, he is really playing by a different set of rules. There's no way that's a tech, you know, a double tech if it's anybody else. And it's just, I could see why he gets upset and frustrated. But that being said, I think it's definitely rescinded. And he's not suspended for the Detroit game. And if I'm wrong, I do start to buy into some of the conspiracy theories because there's no way that's a technical.
Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about DeMarcus Cousins. So I actually watched the Dallas game right before the game we just had tonight, because I wasn't able to watch it last night for various reasons. So I just, you know, watched through the entire Dallas game, which that second half was, or third quarter was pretty hard to watch. And then I went into the Oklahoma City game. And there is a really marked difference between the way DeMarcus Cousins played in those two games. For three quarters of the Dallas game, DeMarcus actually broke into a light jog fairly regularly, and a couple plays he broke into a fast jog. I'm not going to say ran, but fast jog. In that the OKC game we just watched, I don't know if he hit jog, like a trudge. Is he just out of shape? Is he that, like, or was he disinterested? Was he just pissed off because of all the early fouls? What's going on there? Like, what is your take on how, like, slow he was tonight for a lot of this game?
Oh, I think he's completely out of shape. You know, and it being a back-to-back and being out of shape. And I truly believe this, that part of the reason why, you know, on at least half of possessions, he likes to stand around the perimeter on offense is because that means it's 15 to 20 less feet that he has to run back on D. I'm not making a joke. I truly believe that because, like, if you see plays where it's a real struggle for him, especially with Westbrook, who could just grab a rebound and go, it'll be plays where he's kind of under the basket trying to get an offensive rebound. And then the other team starts in transition, and he just, I mean, that's when he doesn't get close to being back. I really think it's a somewhat intentional idea that, you know, if I stay out here on the perimeter or, you know, I shoot an 18 footer, I could actually get back on defense and, you know, I don't have to run as far. I really do think that's at least part of the reason why he doesn't go into the post as often as everybody would agree he should.
Yeah. So in this offseason, is that the number one thing you would wish for with DeMarcus Cousins? Is that, like, he turns into, I don't know, who's a fit big man? I remember Cantor, who we just saw tonight. I remember there was a picture of him holding himself horizontal off of a pole on some beach somewhere.
Mm.
Like, which was, that was impressive. Like, this dude is 7 feet tall and 280 pounds, and he's perfectly horizontal off of a pole. So if he could go to the Enes Kanter school of physically getting fit, that's a great school name, isn't it? Is that your number one thing you'd want from DeMarcus Cousins, or is there something else? Would you like him to learn something else about basketball?
There's a 1 and 1A. So, yeah, 1, getting in shape. And, again, I think right now you're in the honeymoon period with Cousins. I think you're getting the best Cousins. I think you'll continue to get it throughout the year. And I think even with a very optimistic offseason, you'll get it next season. Now, if you're 20 and 25, you know, approaching the All-Star break next year, I think that's when bad Boogie will start coming back. So you have a honeymoon period, but you better start winning next year. But there's two things I would ask him to do, and I really do think he'll do them this summer because he's about to become a free agent, and, you know, again, he wants to prove everybody wrong. One is conditioning, and a couple of years ago he came to camp in great shape, so it's possible. But the other, and I want people to watch this because I think the whole league knows it, Cousins cannot turn over his left shoulder. Every single time he posts up, over his right shoulder. Every single time he posts up, he sets himself up to do a little hook over his left shoulder. And a smart guy like Steven Adams played him like that the entire game today. Dallas played him like that as well, where they'll just kind of sit on that side of him as he's backing in. And then that's what leads to, you'll see these really awkward possessions where Boogie will kind of turn into his hook shot. He'll turn into his hook shot, and the guy will just be standing there, and he'll either get an offensive foul or get a turnover or just shoot like this really ugly, kind of hook shot that goes straight up into the air, and he's looking to get the foul. But it's because he can't turn over the other shoulder, and every smart defender knows it. So what I would be doing is I'd be working on post moves where he could turn over both shoulders. The only way he gets away with it is sometimes he'll turn over that shoulder that he always turns over and then pump fake and then kind of do an up and under through a guy, but it doesn't work against smart defenders. So I just want people to watch that. Every single time he catches the ball on, let's call it the right block, so his right block, if his back is to the basket, you'll see he'll do the same dribbles, and he's trying to set himself up to do a little righty hook shot. Smart defenders play him that way, and he never, ever turns over the other shoulder. So that's the other thing I would have him work on.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, there is some awkwardness there, and I would like to see him, you know, make a move a little faster sometimes. But other than that, like, the guy, I can't really complain about his offense. I honestly have not, outside of Cousins, seen a guy in the modern NBA who is this capable of scoring in the post. Just in general, guys can't do it. And he's very efficient in there and draws fouls like rain. I mean, it's great. Like, I can't complain about his offense one bit.
Yeah, and that's what brings me most to being optimistic. I truly believe with AD and Cousins moving forward, this team, and especially when they get going, they should be in the bonus every quarter. And that is not something that happened with this team in the past. But I don't see any reason why every single quarter they're not in the bonus and taking free throws. And, you know, we even saw in that Dallas game with Drew. Drew got 6 free throws. You know, and some of those were him getting fouled at the basket, but a lot of the times it's just because, hey, the Pelicans are already in the bonus because Boogie and AD got us there. And then, you know, now all of a sudden a loose ball foul or a little push or nudge here on the perimeter and Drew's going to the free throw line. I think this team could live at the free throw line. I think that we started to see at the end of this game a little bit of Boogie drawing a lot of the defense and AD cleaning up his misses off of offensive rebounds. So, yeah, I really see a lot of potential there. And like I said, if Drew Holiday hadn't been the worst guard in the NBA over these last 3 games, I think everybody would be as optimistic as I am about this team. So I think we could talk about a lot of things, but I think the only thing that really matters for these 3 games and then moving forward is your opinion on what's going on with Drew Holiday and how likely do you think it is to be fixed either this year or just moving into the future in general?
Well, the turnovers, I think, are just him. He's still really trying to figure out what he does with a little less space, because there is a little less space on the court with the two of them. And he's not going under the basket and coming back out again. He's usually trying to throw the ball somewhere. He's cutting these cuts a little too close so people can reach it and strip the ball away. And they're also, this is the number one reality, there is not a guard on this team that any other team is going to respect even a little bit. So they put their best defensive player on him, and they tell their other wing perimeter guys, cheat onto Drew as much as you can. So instead of maybe having one or two hands swiping at the ball where you know, in past, he's going to have to, you know, navigate through a forest of people coming after him. And he's never been, like we've said this a million times, he's never been the most creative attacking guard in the league. And when you're now having to face that much kind of extra pressure, I mean, there's a reason why our team has always had trouble at the end of games, and the ball usually went to Tyreek under Monty. And it was because Drew isn't brilliant in that situation. So, you know, I think that's a lot of the issues. He's getting into these turnover issues, and then he's pressing an awful lot. And, you know, I also think that wouldn't you say that he doesn't necessarily handle pressure very well until he's been able to calm down over a period? And I think he's feeling the pressure right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's one of those guys that totally gets in his own head. And, you know, he's just not a natural feel for the game guy. He's got to kind of think it through until it you know. But he has been more aggressive. The first game, I think the problem was he was just way too passive.
Oh, first game he was just looking any chance he could to throw the ball to somebody else, specifically Cousins or Davis. Like that. Was
yeah. Yeah, the second game he was a little bit more aggressive, and man, he had at least 3 shots, one that was a 3-pointer that just went in and out, you know, where a couple of those gets made and all of a sudden, you know, statistically it looks like he has a decent game. But yeah, it would be hard for me. Like, first of all, there's no way he's going to be this bad. Like I said, he's been probably the worst guard in the entire league since the All-Star break. So there's no way he's going to be this bad. It's just a matter of how good he is when he evens out. Is he anywhere near, you know, the guy we saw in January and early February? Is he closer to, you know, the 16-7 guy who's, you know, the 22nd best point guard in the league? Or is he somewhere between those? So I'm just curious where he levels out. But it's hard for me to envision it not working. And that's where, you know, I know this might be crazy, but what if this winds up working out in the long run? And by that, I mean, I think when the DeMarcus trade happened, the conventional wisdom was, well, you know, they're kind of in a situation now where they got to go for it. It's these big three. They got to max out Jrue Holiday because other teams will come after him and they just can't lose him. Is there any way that if he struggles down the stretch here, Philly, you know, New York, Brooklyn, whatever, they say, you know, we don't really want to pay that guy all that money, or we'll concentrate on Lowry or George Teague or George Hill or Jeff Teague, George Hill, whatever. And is there any way that this could benefit the Pelicans in the long run because he's still the right guy for the job, but maybe this struggle will temper the excitement of the other teams and Pelicans get the same guy back and maybe a lower cost than we were thinking on February 20th or whenever this trade went down?
So it is possible that the money might become a little more depressed, but like the offers on the table may not be as high as, you know, we were talking $25 million a year. But there's a couple things that we just have to keep in mind. Dell has never successfully negotiated his own players down. He's always overpaid his own dudes. It's always the case. And why would I expect suddenly Dell to be able to negotiate Jrue down here? I don't see it likely. But then the other thing is, it's all a matter of scale. Like last year, Alan Crabb, who is, I don't think anyone in the world would say is in the same area of skill level as Jrue Holiday, was offered $17.5 million by a team that Brooklyn that was just trying to sign any guard from anyone that they could possibly get. Like there are going to be teams that are just going to be like, I can't get Lowry, I can't get this guy, you know, I'll try Jrue Holiday, and they're going to slap down a big ass contract. And at some point, New Orleans is going to have to just come forward and say, here is our contract, because that's what because basically they're going to be under the gun where you know. If Jrue's agent is worth his salt, he'll be basically, you give us your offer right now, or we're taking the first offer somewhere else, and you get nothing. You lose it entirely for nothing. So, like, doesn't that make best case scenario probably is like $19 million a year, $20 million a year? If that's case. Go ahead.
I think best case scenario is even higher than that. I was just thinking, if you would have asked me at the All-Star break what his next contract was, I would have guessed around 5 years, 150.
Okay.
So now if I could get him for 4 for $90, I'm ecstatic.
Right.
So no, I'm not thinking anywhere below that. I'm just, you know, I really think what's fair, and, you know, fair doesn't equate in business. I get it. But what I would go to him with if I'm Dell is I would offer him a contract that starts as a dollar less than Anthony Davis's deal is next year. And then with the raises on top of that, to me, it's just, it's going to be stupid if he's making more money than Anthony Davis. I totally understand that might be what has to happen. But I would try to at least sell Jrue on that. Like, hey, look, we respect you, we love you, but we all know Anthony Davis is our guy here. You know, I want to pay you, and I want to pay you enough money to make, you know, to make you live financially easily for the rest of your life with your wife. How about we just give you a dollar less than Anthony, and we could call him still our team's highest paid player, whatever, and everybody's. I would at least try to sell him on that. I don't think his agent goes for it, or, you know, his agent cares, but I would hope that maybe if Philly comes along with $25 million and I'm offering 23 and I stood by his side, you know, when his wife had the problems and, you know, when he was getting injured and, you know, also I have Anthony Davis and Cousins for him to play with instead of going back to Philadelphia. You know, I would try to sell something like that, but just trying to find a positive in this Drew Holiday mess. And I'm also not going to assume that the next 22 games go anything like the last three. I'm just saying from what I've seen from those guys being able to pick up fouls on opposing teams, get us in the bonus earlier, and then all the open shots that this team has got, and yeah, they haven't hit them, but to me, the path to them being a 50 to 55 win team next year, I don't think it's that huge of a leap from what I'm starting to see and the growth that I've already seen from game one to game three, with maybe they've practiced one and a half times. So I guess I'm seeing a lot of good. The only thing left I need to see is Drew Holiday becoming at least 80 to 90% of the player I saw in January and early February.
Yeah. I thought about, you know, talking to you about rotations and who's going where with all these new guys. And honestly, I realized I don't necessarily care that much about the rotations right now around those three players. As long as those three players are being dealt with appropriately, the rest of the team is just such a wash. Like, does it really matter if it's Solomon Hill out there or Tim Frazier or Donatus? Those guys aren't moving the needle anywhere. They're just filling a space. And it's the other three guys' job to actually make the impact.
Which is why I would be so much more optimistic of this team if they just didn't sign Solomon Hill.
Yeah.
If they had just done what I asked and just signed a one-year stopgap or a cheap player, you know, whatever this past – I mean, imagine – yeah, you would still have to probably stretch a Sheik, but, like, you would feel like you had so much freedom and flexibility if this, you hadn't signed – Solomon Hill, and let's say you sign James Jones to 1 year, $4 million, or James Johnson to 1 year, $4 million instead, like the Heat did. And you probably get pretty similar production, but I mean, you would just have all this freedom. So that's the only thing I kind of regret. The only other thing that really came up this week that I want to get your take on, because there seemed to be a lot of, you know, a lot of hot takes, at least early on before people calmed down, and that was, the Pelicans, basically, as we ended the last podcast, we had found out that Omri Caspi had broken his wrist, and he was going to be out a couple weeks. The Pelicans already having so many people that were basically taking up roster spots and not helping on their team decided that they had to let him go, basically forfeiting his bird rights and maybe him being able to play the last six or seven games of the season. And in return for what they forfeited, they got to sign Reggie Williams, who had been with the team earlier and, you know, was just another guy. What did you think about the moves, you know, and kind of obviously they valued even a small chance of making the playoffs over Caspi's bird rights. What did you think about that set of moves overall?
So I was actually mostly neutral to it. There's two things, like, to me, it's more of a signal that the Pelicans plan to operate under the cap than anything else. To them, bird rights don't matter if you're under the cap, because if you're going to try to clear as much space as possible anyways, so that you can go after the fourth guy, well, then you're going to be renouncing Omri Caspi anyways. So it feels to me like that is a clear signal that they're going to be trying to, you know, clear as much space as possible and go after a couple more players this offseason. But, you know, Omri Caspi is he's an average player, maybe. A little sub-average. He's not going to be great defensively. He's going to be able to knock down some shots. It'll be if they're going to be operating over the captain, yeah, it makes sense to try to keep him around so you can sign that guy. But this is not like a deal breaker. I mean, he's a perfectly decent player and you could find other perfectly decent players out there. And here's like what you always like to do. If we came to the offseason right now and you had all the money in the world to play with, it didn't matter what your situation was, and Omri Caspi is sitting there on the open market, what deal are you offering that dude anyways? Because me, I'm probably not going much higher than the minimum anyways for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm, you know, I get that people see a small forward who could kind of chew gum and walk at the same time, and they get upset.
Wait, are you saying Solomon can't do that? Because I'm pretty sure I've seen him do that. He can't dribble, too, but
yeah,
he can
yeah.
chew and walk. We can give him that.
On certain days he can, but I mean, I totally get that they see it, and, you know, I think the bigger issue is, I think if, like, let's say they did that, and then they signed a guy who would definitely be a rotation player, then it's worth it. You know, but if Williams is just going to sit on the bench anyway and not play, then, you know, in that situation, could Caspi's bird rights be more beneficial? Maybe. But like you said, I wouldn't assign him to some, you know, $5-6 million deal anyway. So I wouldn't get it. The other thing is, you know, people playing pop psychologist and well, Caspi's one of Boogie's friends, and now you cut him, and how's that going to make you look around the league, and how's that going to make you look to Cousins? As if the Pelicans don't, I mean, almost more than any other team I follow, they care about their perception around the league and how they treat players. Like, to think that they didn't go to Caspi or even talk to Boogie's agent or, you know, do everything right by this guy is completely naive when you look at the way that, you know, this team treats free agent. I mean, they let Terrence Jones go when they didn't have to. They didn't have to let Terrence Jones go, but they basically waived him because Jones took a smaller contract to play with us, knowing that he would get the minutes. And the second we didn't have those minutes for him, we did right by him by saying, you know, we appreciate what you did for us. Now we're going to do for you and let you go find your own team. Like, this team treats players extremely well. So for people to get worried about something like that is nuts. And for people to care so much about Caspi's bird rights when I don't think he's a guy you really, you know, prioritize this much, I don't get. And then lastly, I'll just say, as you brought up the Pelicans operating under the cap, this is when I plugged the article that I put out today. I'm actually doing a multi-part series on this, on all the 2017 options that the Pelicans could take. And today's is part one, and it's 2,200 words on operating under the cap with room and the different ways they could go there. So read that and be ready for parts two and beyond coming soon.
Very exciting.
I kept it under 2,500 words, Ryan.
That's pretty impressive.
I
wasn't aware you could do that.
My old Sunday articles, like the missing piece ones, those were always 3,000 to 3,500 words to get in and to get out as much information as I get out in this article in 2,200 words. Like, I'm going to get myself an extra dessert tonight for that.
Well, I mean, it used to be that I would see your other posts. I'd go in and I'd edit them and I'd remove like 5,000 words. And then suddenly they'd all be back again suddenly when it was posted. So I don't. So, all right. So we've talked about Cousins. We've talked about Jrue Holiday more than I really wanted to because it's been pretty depressing. Let's talk about the most important player on this team, Tim Frazier.
I mean,
what's wrong there? Like, Frazier's not playing very well. You don't care, do you?
No, I think it's hard. I mean, I think he could actually have a very important – if this team operates under the cap and uses cap room this summer, they are going to be a pretty thin team, and they're going to need contributions from guys like Frazier and Diallo. So I actually think it is important if Frazier could play well. I think it's universally the same for – all the perimeter players, they're just playing with this hesitancy because they have these big guys that they need to feed, you know, on their roster. And I think in a lot of ways, you got to go the other way. I think you've got to just be aggressive, knowing that your big men are going to get offensive rebounds, or they're going to eventually eat because the other team is respecting you and worrying about you too much. I think when you try to be passive and just feed your bigs, you know, you're actually doing wrong by them, because all of a sudden all the defenders are going to suck into them. So I think it's just got to be something that Gentry's got to keep pounding. And I saw Frazier do it in spurts in this game, where he would just put his head down and go to the rim, you know, and he wasn't being as passive as he had been in the previous two. So I think it's just going to take a while. I think you got to feed these guys, and that's how you're doing right by them. But eventually the guards are going to realize the more aggressive they are, the more it's going to help Boogie and AD. And I think it's something that they're all learning. Like, my favorite play from today's game was, I think the Pelicans were down six. I think it was like 95-89, and Boogie gets the ball on the wing, and you just saw Etuan Moore's plan the whole time, and he just kind of sprints through the paint, goes right to the corner, Boogie passes him the ball, and without even stopping and thinking, he fires up a three and hits it.
Yep.
Like, that's the way our guards have to think and have to act. And I think they're getting there. I really do think they're getting there, and once they do, even though they might not be the greatest guards in the world, I still think they'll be good enough again if Drew Holiday is anywhere close to what he was.
So you know what I think is the weirdest impact that we have actually on the floor? We haven't mentioned this really in this. Is Davis's shot attempts is through the roof right now. He's averaging like 28 attempts in the three games next to Boogie, when for the season he's at 20. So why is that? That's a weird thing, because when Boogie's on the floor, they feed him in the post like every trip down, it feels like, or pretty frequently. So why is Davis suddenly jacking 28 shots? And honestly, does it even feel like he's jacking 28 shots a game? Does it feel like Davis is just putting him up every time he touches it? Because 28 shots a game, that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think it was a – like, today he was just so hot that they kept feeding him. And even in that Dallas game in the first half, you know, he was – plus he just had – terrific matchups with either a much smaller Barnes on him or Nowitzki trying to cover him. But I think it's because of the perimeter players. I really do. I think that they're essentially being so passive that either him or Cousins are going to take every shot. And I don't think those guys are being greedy. I really think that the wings are being passive. So I just think it's a product of them more than Davis doing anything different. I mean, somebody has to take the shots,
yeah.
And the guards and wings don't seem to be willing to take them.
Yeah.
I mean, every single time Drew goes into a pick and roll, his man goes under the screen. Every time. I haven't seen a team hedge hard on him once. I haven't seen a guy aggressively go over. It's literally every time the guy goes under, and I can't even remember one time where Drew just said, all right, I'm jacking this three. And I don't know. I just think that's got to change, or you got to get different kinds of players who pull that trigger every single time.
Yeah.
Should have got Swaggy P.
Do you really wish they had gotten Swaggy P? I'm kind of a little... No, I would have said no to any sort of Swaggy P acquisition. Do you think they should have gotten him?
I think that's – I'm telling you, like, I think that irrational confidence guard is what this team needs right now. I mean, you want to pull back on turnovers? Taking a shot, you ain't going to turn the ball over if you just hoist a shot.
True.
like, I think they need guards, like, because, like, right now they're trying to be too cute and, you know, get their guys the ball, and I'm only going to take a shot if it's the perfect shot, because if I take a shot and miss, people, you know, I'll hear, or, you know, people will think, why not get it to AD and Cousins when they're on the floor? Like, I think they need, like, one or two just irrational confidence gunners. So I wouldn't have minded a Swaggy P.
Okay. All right, so before our next podcast on Sunday, we have three games. So this is a week where they're actually going to have, you know, a couple days to practice here and there. Wednesday is the first one, at home versus Detroit, followed by Friday at home versus San Antonio. And then they go to the Lakers on Sunday for a back-to-back. They follow Monday with Utah. But we're only talking about through Sunday. So we have Detroit, San Antonio, and the Los Angeles Lakers. Are you going to predict 2-1 again and look like an utter fool?
I am going to say that they go 3-0.
Wow.
The Spurs are on a back-to-back. Now, our game is the first game, but then they're home against Minnesota the next day. I predict we see one of Popovich's famous rest guys.
Where fly him out to us.
Yeah, I mean, why fly out? Why get banged up by Boogie and AD? Just sit down and rest, and then, you know, we'll come back home the next night, and you guys play against Minnesota. So that's what I'm thinking slash hoping happens. I'm hoping that, you know, we get a second shot of good luck with Cousins' technical being rescinded, and I am looking at a 3-0 week.
Okay. I'm going 2-1. I'm going to look like a fool.
Yeah, I'll take 2-1. I would happily take 2-1. But yeah, I'm predicting 3-0.
Yeah, so Detroit, say the technical is rescinded. Apparently Andre Drummond was on the table. I don't know if the package we set for Boogie would net Andre Drummond, honestly. I think Stan Van Gundy would be more looking for more than what the Kings were. Drummond versus Boogie. Who do you think has the advantage in that situation?
Oh, Boogie for sure, because when Boogie goes to the line 15 times, he's going to make at least 12 of them.
Okay.
Yeah. The one thing I will say, and again, I watched a lot of Boogie Cousins, but I didn't watch him in a way where I was evaluating every aspect of his game. I'm curious how Cousins' rebounding numbers are so good, because I don't see a guy who gets rebounds out of his area that much. And then I also see, like, he falls way more than I would think a normal 270-pound guy falls, or, you know, he doesn't get the greatest position. Like, I wonder if his rebounding numbers are more of a product of somebody has to get rebounds and he got a bunch. Like, when you look at him, do you see a fantastic rebounder, or is he just a guy that gets them when they're around him?
Actually, I do see a pretty fantastic rebound. I don't know if I agree with you on this, because there were a couple times tonight. And so the first thing I should say is Boogie is a hell of a flopper. Like, he will, if he's not going to be able to get in position to get to some of these rebounds, he's just going to hook arms with someone and then flail. And he does it all the time. It's part of why, you know, he always looks always pissed off, is because I guess they're not buying his acting. But he actually, at a couple points, especially tonight against the, an admittedly pretty big Oklahoma City Thunder team, he would just kind of slip under directly in front of the basket and seal off like three guys and then just battle for the ball. And he's pretty much immovable when he actually is in the position to get the ball. When it's coming towards him, he's going to get a good chance. Like, there's going to be people who can jump higher than him because he doesn't jump really, but he is not going to move if he's in the right position. And I would be willing to bet that, you know, when he's not in the right position, he's going to try to draw a foul, a fake foul on somebody, you know, 20-30% of the time. And, I mean, I think he's actually a pretty talented rebounder just because he just seals the hell out of people. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just thinking, I guess to me, when I saw these two guys paired together, I figured they would have, like, 90-95% defensive rebound rate when they were on the floor. And then, you know, like I said, at the end of this game, you started seeing the offensive rebounds, which just reminds me of, like, if I see one more scrub Pelican leaking out before a rebound is secured, like, I'm going to Tanya Harding some of our wing players. Like, I can't tell you how many times in this game a rebound came long, and then you just see an Oklahoma City player get it, and then Etuan Moore and Dante Cunningham had already started running down the court, assuming we're, like, first of all, even if we get the rebound and throw it to you down the court, what the heck are you going to do with it? You're terrible. Like, there's no reason you need to get down on the offensive end. You are not needed there at all. So when that ball goes in the air, get to the free throw line, get a defensive rebound if it goes long, and then you could go be worthless on the offensive side of the court.
Wow.
I mean, tell me you disagree. Is there any reason why when Abrines takes a three and that shot goes up, that Etuan Moore and Dante Cunningham should start heading down the court? Give me one reason why. There's none.
Maybe they get a transition three?
No. Come on. There's nothing they are going to do. Absolutely nothing. So if I see that one more time, I'm telling you, I'm taking a – where are they playing on the road next? Because I'm not going to New Orleans because it's Mardi Gras right now. It's crazy. I'll get myself into trouble.
Los Angeles.
Okay. I'm going to L.A., and I'm going to have a stern talking to with them. But like,
that's okay, at least it's a stern talking to, because I thought I might have to cut this whole bit.
Yeah, no. I'll have a stern talking to, but I don't understand. Like, just stop leaking out. You're not going to do anything anyway. Get to the free throw line, box a perimeter player out, help get the rebound, and then just go stand in the corner on offense. It just – that drives me crazy. Okay, end of rant.
Yeah. If you wait a week and a day, they'll be in Utah.
Oh, I will be there for both games at Utah this year, and man, the way that the Jazz are playing, I mean, the schedule is pretty tough. I think they got Utah twice and Houston two more times. Like, I would be shocked if that's not 0-4. I'm telling you, they need to start winning a lot of these other games because there's part of the schedule that
I don't know if I'd call it tough. Like, they got a few teams that are really scary, but they're missing a lot of, you know, usually when you look at a schedule, there's like the two or three teams that are really scary, and then a bunch of teams that are better or just a little bit better, where you know you know if you get 500 from that, you're lucky. It feels to me like it's either really good teams or really awful teams, and there's not really anything in the middle. Because it's, you know, Toronto and Houston twice and Utah twice and the San Antonio game we're about to see and Golden State way at the very end. But all the rest of the games are Detroit, Charlotte, Miami, Portland, Minnesota. I guess there's a Memphis game in there. Three against Denver. Sacramento, there's just teams that this team should be able to beat. So.
Right, but what I'm saying is where's Brooklyn? Where's Philly? Where's Phoenix?
I said Sacramento.
Come on, I mean, with the buddy Scala Bissier pick and roll, I'm not counting as a win. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, I don't see, you say, well, it's either really bad teams or really good teams. Well, then we're in the group with the really bad teams because I see a bunch of teams that are pretty much the same exact level as us. When you talk about all those, I mean, we just lost to Dallas, Ryan.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, anyway, I think they got to start reeling off. But, Yeah, I will just say it comes down to Drew, but I think that there's a lot of positives. Just watch how many times the Pelicans get into the bonus compared to usual, and it's just going to take one or two of these guys to start popping off along with Drew, and I think there'll be a lot to get excited about coming up, especially since it's about to be a 3-0 week, because I said it.
That's right, and you're always right. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and hopefully we will be coming back after a 3-0 week.
Yeah.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.